There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. And what a weekend of sport we have in store for you. Five finals over this weekend, one test match and the small matter of a Monegasque Grand Prix as well. Real Madrid against Liverpool will be our big talker building up to that one. It's live at 10:45. It's live on the big screen down here at Barasti. They will be opening up their indoor dome, especially for the big game. That's a little later on. Before that, though, you will be well catered in the world of football. Aston Villa against Fulham, the richest or the most expensive game of football in the world of football, gets underway at 8 p.m. That's your Championship playoff final, as I said, from 8 o'clock. Before that, rugby fans, strap yourselves in. Exeter against Saris, that's at 6 o'clock. That is the Aviva Prem final, followed by the Leinster against Scarlets, which is at 9 o'clock, the Pro 14 final, and the Top 14 over in France final as well, Racing against Castra, that one at 6:45. The Super Rugby as well, and of course looking ahead to the Monaco Grand Prix, the IPL final, and England against the Barbarians, to name but a few of the sporting events that are attracting our interest over the next 3 hours. Broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
We get used to big weekends of sport, but I think it's fair to say that this is a rather special one. A lot of us wondering what we were going to do without the English Premier League. Well, we are well catered for this weekend. Two fellas who are going to talk us all the way up till 6 o'clock and then hopefully stick around to watch a few of the finalists a little later on. Chris McCarty and Mark Archer alongside me here, and a whole host of guests to welcome a little later on. McCarty, so good, isn't it? Five finals.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Very good
five
afternoon.
Five finals?
Yeah, five finals indeed. We will be here to the wee small hours of the morning, I'm sure, looking up, building up, should I say, to the big one. It is Real Madrid against Liverpool. That one getting underway, as you say, 10:45. I'm excited about that. Aviva Premiership final, I'm excited about that. Exeter taking on Saracens. The one, though, that probably, and I'm a bit of a geek in all of this, the one that really excites me, the one that I will be not blinking for 90 minutes, is Fulham against Aston Villa.
Good, I'm glad you said that.
It's a game where there's no real loser in this from my perspective. Obviously, there will be a loser come the end of the 90 minutes, 120 minutes, penalty shootout. But either team, I'd be delighted to see back in the Premier League. I really hope Fulham do it. They've been a breath of fresh air this season. But, yeah, from a, I guess from a football nerdy point of view, that's the one I'm looking forward to.
And explain to the listeners, because we often hear, don't we? I mean, we debate the playoff system in the Championship, etc., the two teams that go up and then four that battle for that third position for promotion. But they put this game down as the richest game in the world.
Yeah,
why?
Absolutely. Because of the money on offer to get up to the top flight of English football. It's 160 million, give or take, 1 or 2 million minimum for being in the Premier League. So when you go up, you get all the riches, all the TV money comes into your football club, and it's 160 million because that is minimum. Assuming you get relegated, you still get the parachute payments over the course of the next two, three seasons after going down. So minimum 160. I read somewhere this week that if they stay up, if Aston Villa go up or if Fulham go up and stay in the division, it's then worth £280 million, Tom. So it's an awful lot of money. It changes lives quite literally. And, yeah, may the best team win come 8 o'clock tonight.
And it always is a game that delivers, isn't it? Because,
always.
As you said, there is so much on the line. And we've got to get a result today.
Absolutely. There's no replay. There's no nothing. It's literally, if it's a draw, after 90 minutes, we go into extra time. If it's still then, we're into a penalty shootout. There's a lot riding on it, as we've just said, from a monetary point of view. So much emotion. It's a nervy, nervy match. I've never had the pleasure of going to a Championship playoff final. I would love to, because it's even more than a cup final. Yes, there's a trophy at the end of it, would you believe, but there's also that carrot of playing English Premier League football. You turn, no disrespect, but you turn trips from the New Den to Millwall to Griffin Park to play Brentford. You turn that into going to Old Trafford, going to the Etihad Stadium. So for these players and for the managers, Jukanovic and Bruce, an awful lot riding on this evening's match.
Stevie Bruce, been there, done that before. He knows how to get teams back up into the Premier League. We're going to have a lot more chat on that one with McCarty and, of course, the rest of the team a little later on. We'll be hearing from both Villa and Fulham fans. Rugby-wise, though, Mark Archer, not one, not two, but three finals to look forward to a little later on.
Afternoon, Tom, Chris and listener. Yes, three finals in rugby union, focusing mainly in the United Kingdom, to be precise. Aviva Premiership final at Twickenham. It's the defending champions, Exeter Chiefs, taking on Saracens. Saracens, of course, packed with English international stars, the likes of Farrell, Atoje, and the Vinopola brothers. That's going to be kicking off around 6 p.m. UAE time. Then the late kickoff is the Pro 14 final. European champions, or newly crowned European champions, Leinster, four times winners in that competition, taking on the defending champions of the what was the Pro 12 last year, now Pro 14 Scarlets. So it's a Irish, almost at home, you can say. It's not in their home ground, but it's a home game for Leinster, being in Dublin, taking on the Welsh team, Scarlets, there. So plenty of rugby to look forward to. It's a big old day in Northern Hemisphere Rugby Union. And then, of course, the internationals, the summer internationals, get underway very quickly. Tomorrow at Twickenham, the Barbarians taking on Eddie Jones's England. Lots to talk about, Tom.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people will be looking at that England team that are turning out against the Barbarians tomorrow and saying, why is Eddie Jones not selected, the likes of Owen and Farrell, etc. But, of course, they're in action today, aren't they?
It'd be tough to double up. It's a bruising old encounter at Twickenham today. It'll be pretty hard to turn around within 24 hours and put on the Red Rose of England. So, yeah, those players, it's a fully competitive game. In the Barbars games, we know that they're open. They like to play that certain free-flowing style of rugby. England will want to try and get, after the loss of the last three internationals, get a pattern established, some new players, some new faces in the team, the returns of the likes of Danny Cipriani to the squad. A lot of players trying to stake a claim out now, just over 12 months away from a Rugby World Cup. Big tour for England, trying to, well, get their mojo back, really, after a disappointing Six Nations tournament.
Mojo can't play, can he?
Mojo. No, he's not.
Mario Atoje. he can't play because he's playing in the final today.
Exactly. So, yeah, fascinating rugby tour ahead with England going to South Africa. South Africa, of course, with that new coach, Rassie Erasmus, as well, wanting to make a mark in the game there. So it's big times in terms of Northern Hemisphere Rugby Union.
Interesting to get thoughts on that one, but also, lest we not forget, there is plenty of other sport going on. We have got the Test match, which is ongoing at the moment. I know Archie is going to keep an eye on that one for us.
Yeah, and indeed, England in their second innings now, 17-1. Alistair Cook, the top scorer for England in their first innings, been dismissed already for one, LBW Muhammad Abbas. Earlier today, Pakistan were bowled out. Well, not bowled out, they were 9 down for 363. Of course, Baba Azam retired her yesterday on 68, and he has fractured a bone in his wrist or his forearm. He will miss the Test match and miss the rest of the series. But a massive lead for Pakistan on first innings, 179 lead. It's been reduced now slightly by England, but they are currently really struggling in the second innings at 10-1. So plenty of work for England. Pakistan are firmly in control at the first Test match of the English summer at Lord's, the home of cricket. Pakistan in control of that match, Tom.
IPL final tomorrow as well. A build-up ahead of that one. We know who's in that final now. As to other sport, well, let's get down to the south of France. Monaco Grand Prix, third practice underway at the moment.
Just concluded in actual fact, Tom, and no surprise to see the two Red Bulls the fastest. Daniel Ricciardo, 3 out of 3 for the Aussie. He is looking to bounce back after a couple of disappointing races for Red Bull, having won, of course, what was it, back in Bahrain. So Daniel Ricciardo is the fastest thus far, qualifying in a couple of hours' time. In fact, less than 2 hours. What I can tell you as well, Max Verstappen, as so often is the case, brilliant, belligerent in moments and then an absolute disaster in others. He's crashed into the wall for Red Bull, so his mechanics have less than 2 hours to ensure his car is fine and back on track for qualifying. So Daniel Ricciardo the fastest, Max Verstappen second, then comes the two Ferraris, Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Räikkönen, and then comes the championship leader, Lewis Hamilton. Of course, practice doesn't mean much. The real business gets underway with qualifying, and Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas in those two Mercedes will hope that they can find pace that they've yet to show. It is the Red Bulls 1 and 2 then for final practice. Qualifying gets underway 5 p.m. here in the UAE.
What is it about the Monaco Grand Prix? It's the history, isn't it?
It's the tradition, yeah, absolutely. It's everything. It's the heritage, all that's gone into it. It's one of, it is the race that makes up the Triple Crown. You think of the Indy 500, the Le Mans 24 Hours, and the Monaco Grand Prix. It brings out the good and the very, very good of the world. We'll be there, I'm sure, and we've got a mate that'll be there. Mark Archer will be down there watching it from his vantage point on a yacht, probably somewhere in the marina down there in the Principality. I would love to go, Tom. If you asked me which Formula One race would you want to go above all others, no disrespect to the one down the road in Abu Dhabi, it would be Monaco.
I was asking Arch a question, actually. I caught up with Arch for a very civilised lunch on Thursday. and we were talking about the Monaco Grand Prix. We were asking about, I don't know the answer to this, though. Do you know if they resurfaced the roads specifically for the race or not?
That's a very good question. I'll need to double check that. I wouldn't like to say yes and then be proved wrong, so I'll need to double check that.
It wouldn't surprise me. Quite recently, and there wasn't any sort of, obviously all the infrastructure was going in there, but you didn't see anything on the roads. And when you look at the roads, and you've got a number of sort of bumps and turns and things like that, I wonder whether that's just part of the sort of tradition and heritage of the race.
I'll double check. It's a very good point. Let me check that.
Your thoughts, if you know better, would be appreciated. Listen, we've got no English Premier League today. We've got the small matter of FIFA World Cup just around the corner. And, of course, before all that, a couple of massive games of football. Playoff final is first up for you, 8 o'clock this evening. That is Villa against Fulham. And then straight after that, we're into the big one, Real Madrid against Liverpool, 10:45 this evening. In the absence of club football over in the United Kingdom in terms of the Premier League, I thought we might start proceedings off with a little bit of a test between Mark Archer and Chris McCarty, if that's okay. Because the only sort of major football games that I can find on at the moment are over in MLS, which is, of course, Major League Soccer over the United States. So, fellas, I've got 14 teams for you.
Are you balancing the quiz out with some cricket and rugby questions?
No,
just to
I'm not.
Just a pretty big head start here.
Come on, you know, you spent time over the United States. You know your American history, don't you?
Bring it on.
So I'm going to give you the team. I need the city from which they hail. Okay.
Okay.
So I'll give you a nice easy one to start, Archer. Right? Galaxy.
Los Angeles
is the right answer. Okay, so you get the first one. Crew.
Columbus.
It's one apiece. Look at that, Rich. He's on it, isn't he? Red Bulls.
New York City.
2-1. Revolution.
New England.
Is the right answer. Union.
Ooh, the Union. Oh, I'm going to make a stab in the dark. I'll say Washington.
Wrong.
Is the wrong answer.
Philadelphia.
He's taken the lead. Right, let's go over to you, Chris McCarty. The Fire.
Chicago.
Is the right answer. Mark Archer, to you. Impact. Are these the wheels coming off now, are they?
Pass.
Are the wheels coming off here?
Pass.
Well, it's handed over. Impact.
Montreal.
Is the right answer. He could extend his lead here as we go to Chris McCarty, the Dynamo.
Houston.
Is the right answer. He's still 100%. Over to Mark Archer, the Timbers.
Portland.
Is the right answer.
Well
He's back
done.
In the game.
Well done.
Whitecaps.
Vancouver.
Is the right answer. Is he going to go through the entire quiz? Let's go over to Mark Archer. The Earthquakes.
San Jose.
Well done, Mark.
Good call. Over to Chris. Okay, a bit of a turnaround in this one. Real or Real, depending on which one you want to call it.
Oh, Salt Lake.
Is the right answer. So this one's just for, it's just in order to keep your dignity, really, Mark Archer. But final one for you is the Sounders.
Seattle.
Is the right answer. Chris McCarty, you need this to go through unbeaten, 100% record. You need to tell me which city would you find the Rapids in?
Colorado.
Is the right answer. Look at that. The man is extraordinary. We take a short break and try and work out a prize for Chris. And we'll be back with more football after that.
I need to get out more.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Game on. Let's get to the cricket then. Looking beautiful. The same pictures down here at Barasti. Live from Lords at the moment. Looks like it's perfect conditions for batting. Mark Archer.
Perfect conditions for batting, but England are struggling in this match. 19 for 1 in their second innings. They trail Pakistan by 160 runs. It was a big deficit on the first innings of 179. Earlier today, Pakistan were dismissed for 363 for 9. Of course, Babar Azam, 68 yesterday. He retired hurt. He's unfortunately was hit by a ball, has fractured his wrist forearm. He'll miss the rest of this match and the series. So 9 down for Pakistan. That big lead, and they've taken the valuable early wicket of former English captain Alistair Cook. LBW bowled Mohammad Abbas for 1. At the crease at the moment, Stoneman on 3. Joe Root on 10. You would think much depends on the form of Joe Root in this innings, but England's 19 for 1 and they trail Pakistan by 160. Pakistan firmly in the driving seat in the first test match of the summer at Lord's.
We'll get over to the rugby, Super Rugby live on at the moment, so we'll get an update for you on that one from Archie. But before that, let's go over to Monaco as well. So, Makari, in terms of practice, we just had final practice, and we said qualifying will come next, will it?
Yes, exactly that. In about 1 hour and 40 minutes time, 5 p.m. local time here in the UAE, qualifying will get underway for the Monaco Grand Prix. This is the sixth of, what is it, 21 races, I think it is, this year. And Lewis Hamilton out in front from a driver's championship standpoint, but he will have his work cut out because he was fifth fastest in practice was Lewis Hamilton, one ahead of his Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas. It is Daniel Ricciardo who has been the quickest in practice 1, 2 and 3. So the Red Bull enjoying their weekend thus far. I say the Red Bull team is enjoying it, one half of the Red Bull team is enjoying it this weekend, because we did see Max Verstappen so often now that he's a little... I spoke to David Croft, the Formula One commentator, a few weeks ago, and I asked the question, is he overdriving? And it seems that he is right now. He's almost getting overzealous. He crashed into the wall, having just set the fastest time as it was then before Daniel Ricciardo got ahead of him. So his mechanics will be busy boys over the course of the next 1 hour and 40 minutes, ensuring that his car is safe and ready to go back out there for qualifying.
Do they resurface the roads?
They do indeed, yes. I've done my little research, Tom, and yes, they do. A couple of weeks before the F1 boys roll into town, the Urban Planning Department over there in Monte Carlo will take to the streets. They'll ensure that the roads are fixed, that they're nice and smooth, so that there's no crashes and untoward potholes or anything like that, which can cause, of course, major problems in the world of Formula 1. So yes, short answer to your question, they sort the roads.
Let's go to the Super Rugby now. There's a live game on at the moment. Mark Archer's got the latest for you.
Yeah, 1 minute remaining of the second match of today's Super Rugby. It's all the way in Queensland at Suncourt Stadium. And I can tell you it's the Highlanders from the south of New Zealand look like they're going to hang on for a victory against the Reds. They lead 18-15 with under 30 seconds remaining. And they're just trying to run out the clock, playing a lot of one-off rugby here and recycling the ball. So it looks like the Highlanders will get a win against the Reds, 18 points to 15. Result earlier today from the Chiefs were taking on the Waratahs, and the Chiefs were too strong for the Waratahs. They had a victory by 12 points, 39 points to 27. So two other remaining Super Rugby matches this afternoon, Tom. The Bulls are facing the Brumbies. That match is in Pretoria, 5 p.m. UAE time. And late kickoffs at Newlands in Cape Town, where the Stormers will host the Lions in the South African Derby.
No surprise that our focus throughout the next couple of hours is obviously going to be looking ahead to the big finals. That doesn't mean to say that we won't bring you all the latest from the world of live sport, but we will, of course, be looking ahead to the Champions League final, a much-anticipated Champions League final a little later on. Already the text messages are coming in from Real Madrid fans and those not Real Madrid fans as well. Love your predictions as well. If you'd like to share those with us, please do exactly that. Who's going to win the Champions League final a little later on? It is live down here at Barasti if you're looking for a venue to come and watch it. Let's get the thoughts now of Ian Rush. He's in Kiev at the moment, of course. He's looking forward to the game.
It's a cup finals there, and it could be who performs on the day, but hoping that Liverpool can do it tomorrow.
Yeah. I haven't seen you out there today, Rushy. Not playing.
I got a bit of a knee injury, trying to keep myself fit, and that's what happens when you don't get any younger.
Obviously, it's been a while since Liverpool were in a Champions League final. It's not been a while at all since Real Madrid were in one. In fact, it's been a while since they weren't in one. So do you think that favours Real Madrid?
I think it's the experience, isn't it? They most probably have the experience, but at the end of the day, it's who performs on the day. No, it was 2007 last time we were in the final. We got beat there, but we always remember 2005. You know, so when Liverpool gets the finals, anything can happen. And I think watching Liverpool this season, they've been really entertaining, you know, great to watch and all that. I just hope we can take that one more step now tomorrow.
And I guess if you can beat Man City this season, you can beat anybody.
Yeah, without doubt, you know, talking to Pochettino and all that, he's really thought Manchester City would be their main rivals in this competition, but we've beaten them three times this season, so we can beat all the best teams at the time, but it's who performs on the day. Real Madrid will go with experience, but I just feel that with that crowd that we've got and the team spirit they've got in Liverpool Campbell, I think we can just about do it.
You must be delighted and purring every time you see this Liverpool team play well.
Yeah, I'd love to play tonight, you know, they absolutely get loads of chances. But the formation of 4-3-3, that suits them, especially the front men, you know, that's a great formation for them. And I call it football brain. If one goes in the middle, you one go wide, left, right, and everything. They all interact with each other, and that's why they play so well, and that's why between the three of them, they talk talk about Salah, yeah, incredible season, but I think Mane's popped in, Firmino with his work rate and all that. The three of them together, you know, can beat any team in the world.
Just a final thought, as a Welshman, maybe even the likes of Gareth Bale can't get a game, or certainly a start, Real Madrid are that good.
Well, I hope he is on the bench, because I've got a funny feeling he's going to start, but I'd like to see him on the bench, you know, from a Liverpool point of view. But again, if he comes on, he's dangerous, and if he can't get a game in Real Madrid, it goes to show what quality they've got there. But for me, he should be in the starting 11 for Madrid.
Those are the thoughts of former Liverpool man Ian Rush ahead of the Champions League final. Let's get early predictions from the boys down here on the floor at the moment. Mark Archer, which way do you see this game going a little later on?
Well, I read a funny quote this morning, and you know, myself and Chris are Manchester United fans, and obviously we're at Wembley last weekend for that disappointing result. And it was a quote from Paul Scholes, and he said, you know, that it's been a bad season for Manchester United when the result of a Liverpool match determines the fate of your season. So, look, I give Liverpool, in boxing terminology, I give them a puncher's chance. They've got enough power, enough strike power to do some damage upon Real Madrid. They score goals every time they play. For me, though, big finals tends to bring out the best of the Real Madrid players. They're experienced. They've done it in all sorts of whether it be in this competition, you've got World Cup winners in that team. They are just so experienced at the big occasion of Champions League final. So I'm going to go with experience over the form of Liverpool. So for me, there'll be goals. I'll go Real Madrid 3-1.
Real Madrid, obviously, with the pedigree in this tournament, and they're looking to break records again this year as well. Interesting chat from Zidane earlier on in the week, saying they don't go into this game as favourites. Surely that's just mind games.
That is mind games. Yeah, he's looking to take the pressure off his players. I think Real Madrid start the evening as favourites. They are 12-time winners of the European Cup. They've won it for the last 2 years, for goodness sake. So absolutely they do. You've got to go back to 2007 for the last time that Liverpool appeared in the showpiece. What was that, down in Greece? They lost 2-1 to AC Milan, if memory serves me correct. So no, undoubtedly, that's just Zinedine Zidane trying to alleviate the pressure from his men. They will start as favourites, no doubt about that. I am, and I can see where Mark Archer's coming from, and conventional wisdom would tell you Real Madrid will win this. If this match was won on paper, Real Madrid would win this. They are the experienced team. They've got much more experience, as I say. They've got Cristiano Ronaldo. They are the defending champions. A lot more going for them. That all being said, football matches are not won on paper. And I've just got a feeling, and it's if Liverpool can perform the way they have done throughout this Champions League, if Jurgen Klopp lets them off the leash early on, which he will, they'll be at it from minute one. They'll be in Real Madrid's faces. I think they can do it, Tom. I really do. I just don't think Real Madrid are as good, and it's crazy saying this, they're two-time Champions League winners, for goodness sake, successively. They're heading for a third title. I just don't think they're as good as what people will have you believe. Yes, they've got Cristiano Ronaldo. Yes, they've got Sergio Ramos, an unbelievable defender, midfielders, you know, Modric, Cruz, etc. But I think this Liverpool team can frighten them. That front three, midfield three, will be high energy. They'll be pressing quickly. If Liverpool get at them, go and get at them. If they can do that, I think Liverpool win this one tonight.
Interesting times ahead. Your thoughts, please, do text them in to us on 4001. The city of Kiev, we understand, is, it's where the action is happening. It's been happening over the last couple of days as well. Interesting aside on this one, who is the mayor of Kiev? It is a certain Vitaly Klitschko, who is looking to introduce, or making sure that the game goes off without any problems whatsoever. And he's also said midweek he can guarantee the safety of the Liverpool fans from the airport.
Well, you say that now. I'm actually just reading a story now, Tom, about Liverpool fans coming under attack in Kiev last night. Yeah, some horrible scenes there where more than one or two Liverpool fans have been attacked last night. Obviously, I don't know the details behind it, but it's fair to say that all is not well over in Liverpool. There's pockets of fans. It's not the majority. I think it's important. I think we often jump onto the bandwagon with this, saying, oh, trouble, trouble. You get trouble everywhere. It's a small minority. It isn't the majority, but yeah, I'm looking at pictures here of one or two Liverpool fans getting caught up in fighting.
Let's hear from the mayor of Kiev now, ahead of tonight's big game.
As professional, I'm fighting three, four times a year. To be the mayor of Kiev, you have a fight 365 days a year. Every day is a fight. Not easy, but it's very similar to boxing.
Have you had to have more fights then with putting on the Champions League final in Kiev, particularly as you've been trying to sort out flights for Liverpool fans who've been stranded back in Liverpool? Is that right? You've been in touch with the mayor of Liverpool,
Yeah, I just talked with Joe just a couple of minutes ago. We try to fix the problems. What we have is our main task as mayor of the city, my task and Joe Anderson also, the task to make people happier. And that's why we make a solution. We have a problem with 870 fans. We find the planes right now, organize the planes landing in Kyiv. The airport is very, very busy. We have to find the slot. And from 870 person right now is 720 is already happy. We try to find a plane, a small one, which bring more than 100 fans to Kyiv.
How has this problem all come about?
It's a mistake from travel agency who booked too late, and right now our airport is very, very busy.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
Good to have the cyclists listening out there, tuning in, as they do each and every Saturday. Thanks very much indeed for your attention today, ladies and gentlemen. And thanks to all those that are drawing our attention to the Giro d'Italia, probably an event that we don't give enough air time. Chris Froome launched a devastating attack to win stage 19 of the Giro yesterday to take the leader's pink jersey from fellow Briton Simon Yates. Yates finished almost 39 minutes behind Team Sky's Froome, who attacked 80 kilometres from the finish in Bardonecchia. Froome, who's now 33, was fourth prior to Friday's 184-kilometre run from Venaria Real. I tell you what, you've got to take your hat off to the boys, the cyclist boys, haven't you? I mean, we all focus very much, with good reason, on the Tour de France, which is just a couple of weeks away in front of the start of the Tour. But you think that, you know, this is... How many stages? 21 stages in the Giro d'Italia or whatever?
It's one of the majors.
You do that like a couple of weeks before and then you've got to back it up on the Tour de France.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in the case of Chris Froome, of course, we saw him win. He's a multiple winner of the Tour de France. He backed it up with the Vuelta de España, didn't he, last year? He's not a man who's been without his criticism in recent months for various reasons, innocent until proven guilty and all of that. But the ride yesterday, Tom, was a thing of beauty. And it's gone down, or it will go down, as one of the real greats. And arguably, I know it's not the Tour de France, it isn't the blue-ribboned tour, is the Giro d'Italia, but that will go down as one of Chris Froome's very best. He was on his own, Tom, 80 kilometres, grinding it out there, and to produce the performance that he did, it's catapulted himself to that pink jersey, and if he wins this, then he's completed the set, hasn't he? He's won the Tour de France, he's won the Vuelta de España, he's looking to add the Giro d'Italia as well. They are the three grand tours, if you will. They are the ones that all cyclists, when you're growing up, if that's something you want to do, they're the three you target, and Chris Froome, again, is proving himself to have absolutely no peers. He's an incredible individual. I do sincerely hope, once the investigation concludes and all of that, what we've read, that he is exonerated, that he is innocent, because cycling needs it. It needs a clean, good hero. Now, I could be called naive, ignorant, call me what you will, that is indeed the case, but let us hope that it does prove that way, because cycling, it needs that. And Chris Froome, my goodness, what a ride.
He'll go into the Tour as favourite again this year, won't he? Surely.
Well, yes, he will, but it's interesting, he's focused in on the Giro d'Italia. This has been important to him this year, and I just wonder how much physically, mentally, the assault, getting this, if he does go on to win it, how much that will take out of him ahead of the Tour de France. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's maybe leaving it all out there on the roads of Italy in the hope of completing the set, and that may well affect his chances of winning the Tour de France. But if he's fit, if he's motivated, Tom, he is the best by a country mile.
Archie's keeping an eye on the cricket for us at the moment. Apart from seeing pictures of Bumble sleeping on barges, what's going on in the cricket?
Yeah, England are really struggling in this match. In their second innings now, they are currently 26 for 1. The wicket to fall today in the second innings is Alistair Cook, who made 70 in the first innings, top scorer for England. He's been dismissed. LBW to Mohammed Abbas for 1. Mark Stoneman is 5 not out off 35 balls, so he's really putting an anchor down. Joe Root, much would depend around the form and the innings that Joe Root's going to play. He's 15 not out, but England's 26 for 1. Are still trailing Pakistan by 153 runs. 9 wickets remaining. It's all uphill for England to do to get anything out of this test match here, because we're not halfway through the test match yet. We're only into the third day three, and Pakistan are so far ahead. Of course, back on day one, Joe Root won the toss. elected to bat first on a very green wicket. Guys, a few players got in, but then they played some really loose shots. Joe Root was a good example of that, chasing a wide ball outside off stump. He nicked off. And England just didn't really settle apart from Alistair Cook, who made that hard-fought 70 there. So when they were dismissed for 184 after winning the toss, they're really on the back foot after day one at Lord's. And Pakistan drove the impact home with that 350 for eight. And it's just they're in a dominant position now. So England, 26 for one, trailing by 153 still. Of that first
some
week of
quite
Pakistan.
Biting criticism from a few former England captains overnight. Michael Vaughan saying that the England team need to go back to basics. They need to get coached first and foremost. And it was quite critical of Trevor Bayliss. Bayliss, to his part, had to face his critics last night, came out, gave a very extensive interview to Sky Sports, who were doing the asking the questions at the time. And Nasser Hussain on the back of that saying England need to improve in three areas: batting, bowling and fielding, because they are below par at the moment.
Well, it's interesting because you can start then drawing the criticism could then go through to guys like Ben Stokes and also Joss Butler, who have been playing IPL cricket for the first 6 weeks of the season, while the rest of the English players have either been resting or playing a little bit of first class cricket. So to say that Joss Butler, who's been brought back into the team to bat at seven, Ben Stokes has been brought back, you know, from IPL to bat at six, they haven't been playing any Red Bull cricket. And then England win the toss, get just bowled out for 184. Of course you're going to get criticised. Because the guys haven't had the great preparation. It's simple. Pakistan have gone to Ireland. They played a test match a week and a half ago. They've played some first-class cricket to build up for it. And they were on the ball from day one with the deliveries they bowled. They bowled a very full length, and they got a lot of the England batsmen either caught behind, caught in the slips, and put a pressure on. So selectorial-wise, England have been generous to allow their contracted players to go play in the IPL. But is it coming back to bite them, Tom? I guess time will only tell. But they're really behind in this match, and it's tough to see anything but a Pakistan win it so far at Lord's in this match.
Guilty of underestimating the opposition, do you think?
A little, Tom. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I do think that the problems are there. They're there and they've been crystallised. We spoke to Nick Compton this past week. He is of the belief that they're still not finding openers, are they? He was daring to suggest that Alistair Cook needs to take more on his shoulders, maybe move down to three. And then move Root down to four and really ask a lot more of your experienced players. But this England side, and you know, I said it in the week, Joe Root has actually escaped pretty unscathed from what was a disastrous, let's be frank, it was a disastrous Ashes series down there in Australia. And I appreciate that he's the captain, he can't do it all, you've got other players have to step up, but he escaped that one pretty easily. If they lose to Pakistan, it's a two-test match, they're up to Headingley next week. If they lose this two, and I think they will lose this one, if they go to Headingley and lose that one, we need to ask the tough questions.
Yeah, but I think you struck on something, and again, it was something that was brought up in commentary yesterday, was the whole idea of Root's captaincy. You know, it's been called into question in recent times because a couple of decisions he made yesterday, he was fielding at short leg.
I saw that. Unbelievable. I wouldn't have been volunteering as a captain.
A, why would you be volunteering? And B, how can you read a game from short leg?
The traditional position for a captain in most forms of the cricket is either usually at first slip, where you hide behind the wicketkeeper and you can see, get a very good view of what's going on, or you're at mid-off, where you can actually physically get the ball, have a chat to the bowler pretty much every delivery, and just you know, you can captain the game, you can lead from there. But under short leg, what are you worried about? You're worried about either taking a catch or being hit. That's literally there. That's where it starts and ends at short leg. And you can't see what's going on behind you. You can't see what's happening to the bowler. You can't see what's happening off the pitch. And your focus is purely on looking at the bat. That's all you do at short leg, is you look at the bat. And hopefully the bowlers are bowling in the right areas. But, interesting. Joe Root. But, you know, they went with Joe Root as the captain. There's some more experienced players in the team, the likes of Alistair Cook, who was captain for a long time, Broad and Anderson. Are hugely experienced, but they bypass them to be the big captain. So if it's not Joe Root, where do you go?
Yeah. I just feel that this is a crucial time. I mean, it's all good and well. You can get away with losing series on the road and abroad out of your conditions. If England get done here at the home of Lords, I mean, this is a two-game series. They go one down in a two-game series and draw, or dare we say it, lose the series, it's got to be the end of the days for Bayliss.
Well, yeah, I mean,
as the test coach,
he's done a pretty good job with the 50 over.
Keep him for that. Keep him for the World Cup next year, for sure. No problem at all. But as test, he's just not a test coach. And it seems that they're not being coached. The players pretty much have run of the mill to do whatever they want.
It's interesting when you come back to Lords. Look, England, like most teams in modern sort of test match cricket, are extremely tough to beat at home. England are almost unbeatable at home. That being said, teams always find a lot of inspiration.
Someone didn't tell Pakistan that.
No, but no, Pakistan won there last time, didn't they? So all teams find a lot of inspiration going to the home of cricket, the spiritual home of cricket, going to Lords, having the opportunity to get your name on the honours board by getting 5 wickets or getting 100, and they really lift their game at Lords. Visiting teams are hugely motivated, and England don't have the best record at Lords over the period of time because teams are so motivated there. But in English conditions, where the ball's seeming around like it was on day one, day two, and still moving around now, the England bowlers took a while to get their right length, where the Pakistani bowlers zoomed right in on there. The two seamers both took 4 wickets in the first inning. Muhammad Abbas and Hassan Ali took four wickets each for Pakistan. Muhammad Amir was always threatening with his left arm quick bowling, and they just got it right. They nailed it, you know, and their batsmen had to dig in. It was tough batting. You had to grind your way. There was no fancy pants batting. There was no easy runs for grabs, and that, you know, they had 4 guys get 50s. Oh. Ali, Shafiq, Babar Azam and Shadib Khan all put their heads down and scored a 50 and got Pakistan that big lead there. So look, England well behind the eight ball in this match. It's Pakistan's there for the winning.
Let's hear from a couple of the players, shall we? Azhar Ali and Johnny Bairstow were the boys put out in front of the cameras and the microphones yesterday to talk about their respective chances going into this day 3 of the first test.
First 2 days were really good for us, especially yesterday, the way the bowlers got England restricted to 184, and then everyone from every batsman who went in and fought, you know, the condition weren't that easy, and we were playing against good quality English bowling attack. So everyone fought in the middle, and you'd see a lot of 50s. Obviously, as a batsman, you want to score hundreds, but in this case, I think everybody contributed to the team's cause, so that was really heartening to see.
They've played well. Look, they've batted well, they've applied themselves well. We're still going into the weekend with days 3 and 4 to go, which potentially is the best time to bat on this wicket.
We got in a good position now, but it's a long way to go. You know, test match cricket is... test match win never comes that easy, so we know we have to still play good cricket to win this test match.
By no means, like I mentioned earlier, are we out of this? Are we out of this game? We've got people in that batting lineup that are more than capable of gaining parity, like I mentioned in that second and third innings, and going up and past what they're scoring at this moment in time, and then bowl them out for less than they bowled us out in the first innings when potentially it's the worst to bat on in the last.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
The Superdome will be open a little later on this evening. We're told that the doors will be flung open on the Superdome around about 6-7 o'clock this evening is when service starts down there. So if you're looking somewhere to watch your Champions League, your Championship playoff final, your Viva Prem final, the Top 14 final, what do they call it over in France? That's top 14, isn't it?
Top 14, yes.
So what's the Guinness then? That's Pro 14. Pro 14 and top 14. Too many 14s going on at the moment. That is all happening down here. And, of course, the cricket. However, we have a bit of news from Lords, from the cricket. Good news for Pakistan, not such great news for England.
Yeah, Mark Stoneman, after facing 45 deliveries, has been bowled by Shadab Khan for 9. It was a left-handed Stoneman, of course. The ball pitched into the rough. It kept low, took out his off stump. And England are now really struggling. They're now currently 31 for 2, still trailing Pakistan's first inning score by 148. Joe Root, 16, not out. Dawid Malan is the new batsman at the crease. Much pressure now on the captaincy and the batting shoulders of Joe Root. He really has to stand up here and put a knock together and get his team back into the match. But England 31 for 2, Pakistan firmly in control of the first test match of the summer at the home of cricket.
There's a lot of chat going into this game about, there's a big report that's just come out over in the UK about the future of test cricket, and it's in a bad place at the moment because kids just don't want to play test. There's no interest in it, so they're trying to do things. I know you've been talking to Compo about this 100 ball thing that they're talking about, etc. This doesn't help as well, does it? When you've got your heroes of cricket who just, I don't know, they just don't seem to be as focused on the longer format of the game as they do on the shorter formats. And when I look at that England lineup now, you know, I've got David Milan coming in, who likes to give it a bit of tap. He's a man who likes to get on with it. We know Joe Root likes to score at pace. Look after underneath that. You've got Bairstow, you've got Stokes, you've got Butler. All give it a bit of a thwack as well. That traditional test batsman has disappeared.
Absolutely, it has. Yeah, we talk about it so often, don't we? The multifunctional, I guess, batsman these days. The run rates are up. I can't think of anyone who is back in the old school, someone that would be
Alistair
happy.
Alistair Cook,
I guess, but of the new breed that is happy just muddling away for 8 hours, that has the concentration, the focus, the appetite, more than that, to go about doing that in order to wrestle the momentum away. And I just don't see that. That's not the cricketer, the modern day cricketer, Tom. They want to get after, they want to chase after the batsman. And I think in part, that's why we're seeing an awful lot more test matches now wrap up within 4 days, because there is an appetite to go after the bowler and get on with things. And, you know, I'm with you on that. I think
so. That's a really good point you make there. And let's put it to Arch. Could you ever, I mean, heaven forbid that we mess around with the laws of cricket and everything, but could there ever be a day where you say, look, it's a four-day test?
Oh, definitely. I think the ICC have considered four-day test matches. We saw some recommendations come out in the last couple of weeks about the new test championship, which has been, I think, to go from 2019 to 2021. Yeah. Where each team will play home and away against the other with a final. So there's some context, there's some reason behind playing test matches apart from just playing a 2-test match series or a 3-match series or a 4-match series, or like the Ashes, a 5-test match series. There will be some meaningful context that the teams that do well in this test championship period will get to play in a final. Also within that, they're looking at playing more day-night cricket to bring in people in that evening to change the game up, to play with the pink ball under lights. And some of the test match sort of venues that need to encourage better attendance. And they've also looked at considering the options for 4-day test matches as well as part
maybe
of that.
Maybe keep the 4 days, but then you've got that extra day just in case of
potentially
weather.
Yeah, that could work. I know they're also discussing scrapping the coin toss at the start and allowing the away team, because we've seen it so often, and listen, history shows that the away team, the travelling team, it's an even difficult test. You know, it's an even more difficult, the fact that the home team is able to prepare the pitch for their strengths, if you will, tailor it to their strengths. What we're going to see, or certainly the suggestion has been had at the ICC meeting, I think it's in Mumbai later this month, if memory serves me correct, that they're going to discuss that, doing away with the toss and allowing the away team, just to bring a little bit of equilibrium, allow the away team to set the standard and, I guess, set what they want in terms of batting or bowling first.
Right, we have talked a lot about the cricket, but there are plenty of other sports ongoing around the world. Mark Archer was up nice and late, or is it nice and early this morning, watching the NBA. We're into the finals at the moment, are we?
We're at the conference finals. So the NBA are split into two, basically, two leagues, if that makes sense, the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. And earlier this morning was the Game 6 of a very fascinating Eastern Conference Finals. We had the Cleveland Cavaliers facing elimination. They trailed 3-2 to the Boston Celtics. And who stepped up? Well, the King stepped up, of course, LeBron James, when it really mattered for his team. The greatest player in modern basketball of this current era stepped up with 46 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 5 out of 7 three-pointers, and basically carried the Cleveland Cavaliers on his very broad shoulders to victory. He played all but 2 minutes of the match. He didn't want to sit down, and he was the man that made all the difference to get to that final match now. So it's 3-3. The final match will be back in Boston, but it was a great win for Cleveland, 109-99. Let's just have a quick listen to LeBron James talking post-victory after filling up the stat sheet.
Welcome back to Cleveland, where LeBron James and the Cavaliers have forced a Game 7 this morning after workout. You said you didn't enjoy being in this position, that you could lose and go home, but the back-to-back dagger threes, the late shot-making, and the performance overall, LeBron, when it's all said and done and you perform like this, even though you're uncomfortable, what does it feel like?
You know, it feels good just to be able to play for another game. And, you know, like I've always said, Game 7 is the best two words in sports. And for us to be on the road in another high-sign environment where we've had no success up to this point, you know, we should roll this opportunity and, you know, have fun with it.
Earlier this year, you said this season felt like 5 different seasons in one. And on a night-by-night basis, you're not sure which of your teammates is going to perform at a high level. So how on earth are you one game away from the finals?
Just a lot of heart, a lot of grit, being resilient, And no matter who's been in the lineup, no matter the different type of lineups we've had throughout the course of the postseason or even the regular season, we just try to find an ability to try to win. And no matter how you're able to win those games, you just try to come out victorious. And listen, we have one game to be able to compete for a championship. And, what more can you ask for?
7 40-point game of this playoffs. No one in NBA history has ever averaged more in game sevens than you have, 34.9 points. What about that game makes you so special?
I don't know, Doris. I mean, I've just been fortunate enough to play some good basketball throughout my career. Even in game sevens, I try to play great in game ones through seven. So I don't know. Hopefully I put myself in a position to put this team in a position to be able to play great once again on Sunday. So I look forward to the opportunity.
What's your message, and how do you get your guys to pack their games with them?
Listen, if I'd have told you at the beginning of the season that we only needed one game to go to an NBA Finals appearance, would you take it? I think every last one of those guys in the locker room, not only guys with uniforms on, but with suits and everything, with polo shirts and everything, would accept that challenge. So, I mean, that's the clear-cut message.
I'm sure you know it's National Wine Day. You burned one. Mike.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
LeBron James there speaking after yet another incredible performance from the man known as the King. 46 points. You said it there, Arch. Game 7, Boston Celtics against the Cleveland Cavs. They're on the road, though. They head back to Boston. Who wins it from here?
I think at the start of the series, I think I came out and said, look, Cleveland would know how to get this done. But Boston have really impressed me. The coaching of that team. The big question now is they've lost Kyrie Irving with a hamstring injury. He is the guy that can really make a difference for them. He's the all-star that left Cleveland, of course, in free agency. But Boston as a team, as a team of players who are really pulling together, I think at home court advantage is going to be so important. It's tough to see anyone for me now. As good as LeBron is,
wow.
As good as LeBron is, I think Boston playing team basketball at home should just have enough to get past them. And what's interesting, though, for Cleveland is Kevin Love left the game with a concussion, and it's rare. His status is now not known. It's unlikely he will play. So Cleveland, if LeBron gets his 40 or 50, they're still struggling to get the rest to keep the team competitive, particularly away from home. The momentum's always good at home. You've got 90% of the crowd behind you, if not 100%, and you've got that wave of just euphoria of thing. And so LeBron's been amazing. Look, he's seeking to play in his eighth straight NBA Finals, which is amazing. The big question that Cleveland Cavs fans are that he's having to do so much on his own shoulders here. He's got the option to opt out of his $35 million salary at the end of the season and be a free agent. And pretty much there is a list of suitors there who wouldn't want him if you've got the cap space to sign a LeBron James.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.